Hello and welcome to the 2Vibo, the podcast where we pop our prescription medication like they're Skittles. I'm Jonathan, and with me as always is my co-host Douglas. How are you, Douglas?
I'm good. He really lines them up. Hey,
yeah.
Like he sets them all up and then just kind of knocks them back.
Mm.
Good for him.
Set them up, knock them down. Like mm-hmm.
Set them
bowling pins.
How does the saying go?
This is your first time tuning into 2Vibo. We've taken a snapshot of IMDb's top 250 movies of all time as of January 2020. And we'll be watching them from number 250 through to number 1. In this podcast, we discuss our opinions, our thoughts, and our reactions to the movies we're in. Buh. Today's movie, number 70, is Witness for the Prosecution.
An experienced barrister who is one step from retirement is dragged back in by a murder case that seems like a lost cause.
Witness for the Prosecution was directed by Billy Wilder. We've had him before for The Apartment and Some Like It Hot and Double Indemnity. And we have him, I think he had like a couple episodes for Sunset
Boulevard.
Yeah,
a couple weeks. Yeah, yep.
It was also written by Billy Wilder as well as Harry Kernitz, who's known for How to Steal a Million. Noel Coward, known for Brief Encounter. Lawrence B. Marcus for The Bigamist. And it was based on a stage play by Agatha Christie. Douglas has written in parentheses, like all of the murder mysteries, which is...
And I miswrote it as all of the murdery mystery. And I feel like that's what they should be known as from here on out.
Give a little, insert a little bit of levity into a
inherently murdery mystery.
Very negative...
topic, yeah, genre.
Neither Douglas nor I have seen this film before.
No. Let me tell you, I'm going to come right out the gate on my thoughts on this film because Billy Wilder just does something to me. Like, ever since Ace in the Hole, I've just been so behind what this guy does as far as direction, as far as the stories that he tells, as far as the actors that he gets. It's just all killer, no filler for me. Double Indemnity was fantastic. Some Like a Hot was fantastic. The Apartment is probably still my top tier. Haven't seen Sunset Boulevard yet, but we will in a couple of weeks. I'm not going to lie. Witness for the Prosecution, I think, is like a neat third. I think Some Like a Hot is probably second for me.
Mm.
And then Witness for the Prosecution is like a third. But it's so... like, it's still so gripping.
Mm.
No one really wrote screenplays, I don't think, like Billy Wilder did, you know?
Yeah, I'm really interested in what the stage play looks like and how
it's
been.
It's really fucking cool. I did a little bit of digging on it because I was so curious to see what it was like. They did a revival of it not too long ago where they put it in a London, like, hall that was previously used as like a courtroom.
Mm.
So
oh, cool.
All of the audience are sitting in as the jury. And they like watch the play, like it's like an amphitheater style kind of a thing where they're fully surrounding like the stage and they're like, doing the play like legitimately in a courthouse. Like,
fuck.
And the audience is the fucking jury. It's so cool.
We fucking
such a fucking mad idea. I'm really pissed that I couldn't see it because that just sounds like such a fucking fantastic idea.
Mm. Yeah, that's perfect. Like,
The
way that film, the way that stage play was meant to be performed.
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
So cool.
Yeah, I wonder how consistent how much tweaking the screenplay had. I assume probably not an insignificant amount given how many people were involved.
I've done a lot of digging on this film because I really enjoyed the shit out of it. I love Billy Wilder. I love finding out about Billy Wilder things. He did take a bit of levity when it came to the kind of more outright inclusion of Charles Laughton's character, Sir Wilfred Roberts. He plays not like a main character, but he's not like a side character either.
Okay.
He's just in the film, Billy Wilder really pushes him to the forefront, which thank God, because Charles Laughton, I cannot believe I haven't seen this man sooner. He is so fucking captivating in this film. And yeah, I think there's some other stuff when it comes to Christine Vole and Leonard Vole and like their kind of interactions and stuff like that. I think Billy Wilder takes a little bit of creative license in that department as well.
Mm.
But besides all of that, a lot of the broad strokes are pretty by the numbers.
Okay, so it was like mostly character stuff that got
Yeah.
Spot. Yeah.
Yeah. And some stuff towards the end that Billy Wilder just kind of added in just to, you know, give Wilder loves his, you know, I wouldn't call it a twist because it's not really a twist. It's like he loves his depth to his characters, you know? He loves the meaning within the meaning within the meaning kind of mentality.
Yeah. Right.
Because we're so complicated as humans, and I feel like Billy Wilder really gets that.
Yeah, I thought that's sort of like nice to hear because I thought that the characters were like super solid.
Yeah.
In this, they may be presented like quite straightforward, but you get to dig into them a little bit more. And I think also, you know, they're not like the world's deepest characters, but I think they're just presented in a way that's very fun.
It's really cool to have a courtroom drama that isn't quite as high stakes and lofty as perhaps, not Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, because that one was pretty like tame and by the numbers
Nuremberg.
As well. And I guess like different thing, because that was like politics. Yeah, Judgment at Nuremberg.
Who also has Marlene Dietrich in it.
Dietrich, yes. Yeah, because she's a German actor, which is, really cool. Wow, good shout. I didn't pick that. Yes, not quite as high and lofty and grand and verbose as something like Judgment at Nuremberg, which, while I did really enjoy Judgment at Nuremberg, I think Billy Wilder shows, and Agatha Christie, show that you don't necessarily need all that much depth for it to still be intriguing and engaging and kind of thought-provoking. I really admired the simplicity of it. I'm not going to lie. There's when it actually comes to the court proceedings itself, there's like, I think three witnesses in total, four witnesses that are called to the stand. And like, that's it, you know? It's not as fucking long and drawn out and like we are in the fucking courtroom as much as something like Judgment at Nuremberg. Or I even thought of my other probably fave, which I'm probably going to receive a bit of clap for, The Trial of the Chicago 7 is one of my other favorite courtroom procedural drama films. Haven't seen it in a couple of years. Would love to give it a rewatch. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. And also, not quite a courtroom film because it's not, you know, the entirety of the film. But the courtroom sequences in Oppenheimer, I also really enjoyed how Nolan kind of operated all of that period in time. I thought was really engaging and compelling and contributed a lot to where the story was going and everything. But I remember watching it in theaters going, fucking shit, this is dense. Like, there's so much to unpack and unravel from all of this. I'm kind of struggling to keep up with it a little bit. Whereas with Witness for the Prosecution, it feels so much more, you really can understand everything, which maybe for some people might rub them the wrong way because, you know, there might be people who really enjoy Judgment at Nuremberg or the Oppenheimer courtroom sequences because there is so much meat. There is so much to delve and weave into and unravel. But for a little dumb fuckboy cinema goer here who just loves anything that Billy Wilder touches, I'm so down for this just nice, cute little Agatha Christie kind of whodunit, but like also just kind of, it's not really about whodunit. I think it's more so about the procedure, right?
Yeah. Well, it's about like proving innocence, you know. It's not about It's not about finding out who did it. It's about
proving innocence.
I was like, stop yourself, you're spoiling it. And then I'm like, no, I'm not spoiling it. That's the fucking conceit of the film. And I mean,
sorry, I kind of ran with it for a little bit. My bad. Good.
No, awesome. You made me think that I feel like it's paced really well. Like I
thought so. Yeah.
I didn't feel like, despite there being your red herrings and your you know, witnesses that are maybe, it's more about proving that they, like, proving this witness unreliable, basically. And, you know, when you sort of look at it, you could go, okay, well, that character could be removed from the story and it would still work. I also didn't think that it felt like a waste of time to remove them from the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's aspects of it that are just communicating the situation with the barrister's skills and the way that he approaches a court case. Those other sort of quote-unquote side plots almost just help to describe without exposition.
I
think that the larger structure from like the courtroom drama perspective was a little odd, but we will definitely talk about it in spoiler zone. And it might have just been a feel thing. You might disagree with it, and if you do, I'd be like very happy to be like, oh, I guess it was just me. It's just how I was feeling about it. So, but yeah, pacing wise, I never quite felt, you know, didn't check the watch. Never felt like there was a bit where I was.
Never do. Unexcited. With Billy Wilder films in particular, every single Billy Wilder film, I've always been just glued to what's going on. Go ahead.
You reminded me of this. Ace in the Hole. I should go back and watch that again because I remember.
Yeah, I kind of want to give it another wrangle as well. I really enjoyed it. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you loved it, and I was in a terrible headspace and watching a film about a guy being trapped in a mine. It just wasn't doing wonders for me.
The whole, like, capitalism, media circus, you know, like, all that kind of dialogue as well.
If you sort of look at it from face value, it's very depressing.
Yes.
I mean, it is. I think it's very depressing regardless, but
aged more, extremely well in the worst of ways, Ace in the Hole. Yeah.
Be very excited to watch
that. We haven't seen that film in 4 years. Wow.
Yeah, we watched Ace in the Hole really early. Remember that?
Yeah, early in the piece. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm just talk about with music on this one.
Just a couple of orchestral stings. By the numbers.
Which I think happens with a bunch of this sort of era of film. Like, it'll be like
your 50s.
Something in the opening credits, something in the closer, maybe a little something in. A
couple of little transition-y stings.
Yeah. And then just sort of leave it at that, which, you know, is it nice. I think it shows that they've done a pretty solid job, that you can sort of not even really realize that until the film is over and you start thinking about it. Like, film had enough to work with. It didn't need to
absolutely
pull out a little funny music.
Didn't need to, like, bloat itself.
Yeah.
Worth noting, it was composed by Matty Melnick, who also composed for Some Like It Hot. Not really much else in the way of film composition. However, he is more widely renowned as his contributions as a performer, more so than a songwriter.
Sure.
So he composed several songs which became pop standards, like I'll Never Be the Same, which was recorded by Frank Sinatra, Teddy King, and Jerry Southern. I'm Through with Love, which was a big hit for Bing Crosby. Goody Goody, which was Helen Ward. And Benny Goodman, I'm pretty sure, as well. But yeah, a bunch of like kind of jazz, you know?
Yeah.
The crooner jazz circuit he really was well tapped into, which I think reads in a lot of the compositions from definitely Some Like It Hot and the bits in Witness for the Prosecution. Yeah.
What do you think about the comedy in this? What do you think about the funny bits?
Without going into spoilers or anything, or like, I mean, I guess it's not really a spoiler. My first note was female belittlement is funny, smiley face, / sarcasm. I like just that general tone and kind of arc of Wilfred. I'm like, I guess it was a different time, you know, like I can understand, but wow, you're really knocking back that water. That was crazy. You're thirsty little dude over there.
I've pre-gamed this episode with two coffees and all the water has left my body. I need to replenish it.
All the dehydration just hit you all at once. That was crazy.
You started talking. I'm like, this is about to fucking have a little yap session. So I'm just going to pour some water down.
Little did you know I would call you out mid-yap session.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it.
I think the, female belittlement angle is a bit trite and kind of lame.
Mm.
But the other little sparks of like just witty kind of things that people say, you know, like The Apartment was so good for comedy because there was just so many fucking amazing lines that people would come out with where you're just like, oh my God, what a line, what an icon. Like Billy Wilder has that at certain points throughout this film. Like when they're putting Wilfred on the fucking, the stair, stero, fucking, what do you call it? the lift that goes up the stairs. I know it's got a name, I just can't remember it.
I swear to God, if they're called stair lifts.
Probably is. And when he gets on it and he says something along the lines of, if the barrister should fall off the banister, I was like, that's Billy Wilder absolutely just jerking himself off when he's writing this. Like, yeah. No, so many, like, not as many quotable lines as perhaps The Apartment or even Some Like It Hot, but when it hits, it fucking hits, especially in the courtroom stuff. All of that dialogue is so fucking crisp and so tight. Yeah, not a single word is wasted, which is amazing.
I sort of didn't read the interactions between character names. Give me a second. Jesus.
Between Wilfred Christ. And Miss Plimsoll.
Thank you. As female belittlement, it read more to me as like this wasn't what it was in the text of the film, but like old couple bickering in a way that...
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, yeah. Like, get off my case kind of...
Yeah, type shit. Like, you know, I think him like at the end going like, oh, my friend, you know what? Like, I think that is like not... unearned. Like, I don't think there's anything offensively bad about it. Spoiler. Mild spoiler. mild spoiler. He doesn't hate the nurse at the end. But...
mild spoiler. It all turns out A-okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's more like... Yeah, I don't know how to feel about it. Because she's also, like, his medical professional. Like, he doesn't like his doctor either. You know?
Yeah.
He's... Yeah. He doesn't care about, you know, all this jump through hoops and stuff. He just wants to go out and practice law. So.
There were some lines that felt as though it was targeted because she was a woman and less so because of her profession, where I was like, I don't know and about I'd, that I'd, one, I'd Wilder, believe that, but- yeah.
I don't remember it, but I also don't really remember much of what was going on except for him, like, pulling cigars out of...
random people's coat pockets and shit. Just mugging everyone for their cigars. He's so cool. I love Charles Laughton. He's so fucking good. I really want to look at more of his filmography and see what else he has done, because he's such a fucking delight to watch. And his face is just so prominent, you know? Like, his chin and this kind of very, like, distinguished kind of way that his face just rests in. I don't know. And his eyes, man.
I like the, cool just the pure physical performance distinction between Leonard Vole and Christine and Sir Wilfred. They all carry themselves in very specific, definable ways.
Yes.
Almost like the sort of character silhouette concept, you know? Like, Christine is always... Christine is always very prim and proper and upright and square.
Yeah.
And
a lot of the time, Leonard is kind of sweating profusely and clutching his head and like crying in the club, basically.
Yeah, it's just like nice to have. They're not crazy deep characters, perhaps, at least from that perspective. But it's just nice, you know. It's much better than them sort of just being very flat. Because you could play characters much flatter and still have the story work, but be less engaging. So, yeah. A little extra element, I suppose. And in general, I thought that the acting was pretty good.
Yeah, across the board, I was pretty happy. Couldn't quite get behind Marlene Dietrich as much this time, as much as Judgment at Nuremberg. She just sometimes felt a bit too kind of stony and cold to really fully kind of want to get behind.
I feel like I've got something I want to say about that, Douglas.
No, go ahead.
I think that it's something that needs to be said in the spoiler zone. So I'm wondering if we track that direction. Is it about the time?
Well, we have faffed on for about 20 odd minutes, and that's usually I've got the big clock behind me here at 250 LLC, and you can see we've hit the 20 minute mark, and it's starting to go. You got it. That's spoiler. You need to go away now.
It's a giant red 7-segment display, and it flashes. And it's fine for Douglas because it's behind him, but I'm having to look at his camera. Yeah, it's burning my fucking retinas out. So we better get over the spoiler zone before.
Sometimes,
I suffer permanent damage.
starts, yeah, really freaking out. And I'm like, what's going on? And then I turn around and I'm like, oh, it's the clock.
A giant flashing red clock.
So, in correspondence with the clock, Jonathan, do you recommend witness for the prosecution?
Put on my safety squints for the giant clock, Douglas. Yeah.
Protect your eyes.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I think it's not the deepest thing we've had, but I think maybe to some degree we've both probably appreciated this because it was a little lower key than stuff we had recently.
Yeah. Like, the stakes still feel high, but they don't feel as astronomically high as some of the other stuff that we've
It's not on Sundays.
Putting away. Yeah, fuck, no.
But it is still high stakes, at least text.
Yeah,
in the text of
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, like, someone's life is on the line, you know? And he's, like, he's facing the fucking death penalty. Like, it's intense stuff.
Yeah.
But I never felt exhausted from it, you know? I was just entertained and thrilled and invested more so than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which I think is a great, nice fucking film to have, you know? Cool.
Absolutely.
Love it.
You probably already know my take on it. Is anything Billy Wilder? I'll suck that man's dick. He's already dead. He died in 2002. I'm going to go see where he was buried. I'm going to scoop him up.
Suck that zombie dick.
Suck that skeleton dick. I'm going to put Billy Wilder's dick in my mouth. Cut that and put it on the Instagram. Here we go. It's spoiler time. Let's get that spoiler sound.
Oh, God.
We're now in the spoiler zone. Anything we say will spoil witness for the prosecution. And this is perhaps the first film in the 250 where at the end of the film, they specifically tell not to spoil the film for other people who are going to watch it.
How fun is that?
Being said, I want to once again reinstate we are now in the spoiler section for Witness for the Prosecution. Mm. If you have not seen the film, Billy Wilder himself from the grave bids you to go and watch the film for yourself before listening to the remainder of the podcast.
Thank you, Billy. It's like he's here with us in spirit.
I'm sucking his dick. Do we just talk about like the last 15 minutes? Or like what do you want to talk about?
I specifically wanted to talk about, I think... I'm wondering how much, like, how, because Marlene Dietrich, her deal is that she's meant to be the soulless, harsh, you know.
Yes. Unpenetrable kind of, yes. Yeah. But then it's revealed that that's all kind of a facade.
Yeah. And I wonder how intentional it was casting her, knowing that that's
true.
Something that she can do. At least we know that, because she has a, I gather, a bit of a storied history. Like, I think she's, I was staying at a friend's house, and she had doll on her desk called Marlene, named after Marlene Dietrich.
Wow, yeah, crazy.
It sort of worked out. She's got more under her belt than just these two films, basically. So
absolutely, yeah. No. She is very prominent within this particular time span of film. Yeah.
I sort of felt like, well, actually, I mean, so watching this with friends, and we're sitting there, we're already having our like trying to figure out the film, like in the first 10
what's
minutes
going
of the film,
on,
right?
Yeah.
When he's explaining his fucking plight to Sir Wilfred. Don't know why I can't keep that in my head. To Sir Wilfred. And we're like, and I was like, oh, he did it. You know, that was my take. Right?
Yeah.
Because I'm like,
good instinct.
Yeah. It's totally metagaming the whole thing, but you're like, okay, well, he's so helpless and
yeah, the lost puppy facade is almost like too lost puppy to be fully believable. Yeah.
And it got swept to the sidelines, but I suppose the fact that that was an instinct does mean that the film wasn't completely, you know, because you don't want a twist like that to be completely impossible to be sort of suspected.
Yeah, it still needs to be plausible. Yeah. Which I think with the the hysterics that he throws when he's in the witness booth, that kind of threw me off the scent pretty hard of it being him, which I thought was really cool. And honestly, like, I knew that it wasn't resolved, you know, when they're like, you're not guilty and everything is packing up. It's amazing how he does it. How it feels like the stage is almost deconstructing and there's literally Wilfred center stage, spotlight. He's like, but there's something else. Like, what am I not seeing? And literally everything else is all just being pulled and taken away from him. But it's just him going, fuck, there's something. What am I not getting? And the initial reveal of a crazy Cockney lady actually being Christine absolutely took me for a loop. I don't know why I didn't pick it in that scene where she rocks up. But goddamn, makeup department went hard on making her really blend in. Which, by the way, Marlene, need to work on that Cockney accent just a smidgen, babes. But like, it's still, you know what?
I think that was an intentional move. I feel like
You're putting in your work, and I'm proud of you. That as a first twist, I was like, oh, okay. Like, is that the twist? And then, you know, it just kind of keeps on compounding twist upon twist upon twist, which really fucked me up. I've never had a film do that so consequentially in the way that Witness for the Prosecution does, because it lays out that and then it's like, oh, but actually it was him and I was just kind of covering for him the whole time so then we can split the money and run away together. And then he comes out and he's like, ah, actually, I don't really want to fuck with you. I want to fuck with this other dame as another thing, like another layer. And he's just, while they're adding this many layers within literally the last 10 minutes of a film, without it feeling horrifically rushed or undeserved, is crazy. Like,
I thought
the pacing of it is
I thought it
absurd.
Felt a little rushed, personally. Like, that was the one thing that felt a little off to me. Because
it is kind of like, ha-ha, and then, like, run over to the other side of the stage, pull back the curtain, ha-ha, and then run over to the other side of the stage and pull back a curtain, ha-ha, like.
Yeah, a little bit. But
which, by the way, that was the added bit from Billy Wilder, was adding in the other dame that Leonard is chasing. That was like an added another layer of twist that then gives Christine the catalyst to grab the knife and stab him. Which, by the way, amazing Chekhov's gun. Fucking superb shit. I was like, when that knife like first got brought out and then Wilfred was like, take note of, like, it's really fucking razor sharp. I was like, if some motherfucker isn't getting stabbed in this courtroom within the next 30 minutes, Billy Wilder, I got my man Chekhov. He's going to want to have some words with you after the show. Fantastic. I was like, because she like stumbles back into the chair and then before the camera even panned over to it, I was like, the knife.
Like, it is satisfying. It's definitely like,
yes,
the whole, like, it's regardless of how it's paced, all the puzzle pieces falling into place is really fun. And
yeah.
And like her being like, well, if I'm going to, you know, be on the trial for perjury, I might as well be on trial. For murder,
yeah, what a fuck, yeah.
And then it getting to the end,
explosion.
Sir Wilfred being like, I need to go back and defend her, and then
then
the fucking
happy music as her and Miss Plimsoll walk off, followed by,
please do not spoil this film. Witness for the do not spoil Witness for the Prosecutor. We'll kick the shit out of you if you spoil Witness for the Prosecutor. Don't fucking spoil.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I do think that you could give it a little more time. I'm not sure if that was
like
more,
how would you do it?
Yeah, I think you could straight up extend it with functionally dead space, right? Literally have Sir Wilfred something. Okay, say it does clean up, and So Wilfred leaves and like he's off to the fucking Bahamas or wherever he is. And he's in the taxi and he's sitting there. And you can literally have dead air of him going like this and maybe saying like something airy fairy, like, you know, oh, I wonder what it really something's was. Like something doesn't quite work.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and then goes, oh my God, taxi man, turn around. We're going back to what's his name's house, right? And they go back to the fucking house and then have that showdown and just I think it literally just needs a little more nothing to
a little more breathing time before getting the eureka moment.
Because I think
I like having the panache of it happening in the fucking courtroom itself.
Yeah, happening in the courtroom I think is good. But I think that you as the viewer also realize something feels off, but you're only given maybe a minute to really think about it before it's
really
resolved.
Dwell on it. Yeah.
And I think it's so key to the story sort of being satisfying that you need to have an opportunity to try and piece things together in your head to then feel validated or the like head slap moment.
Yes, Dial M for Murder did that really well, I think, from memory. It really gave you enough time to be like, all right, you now have all the puzzle pieces in front of you. This is your last chance to put shit together before we do the Hercule Poirot and we gather everyone in the room and then Hercule Poirot goes, ha ba 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 and explains everything that happened.
Because I think I recall the film being an hour and 55 and I wonder if literally just padding all those scenes a little, you know, pad each of those shots by like 30 seconds and use that 5 minutes up.
Yeah, true.
I think it's good. It's good. Mm. It's enjoyable. It's satisfying. It lays this gambit of there is something else wrong, but I think it just does just a tiny bit too quickly. And I think, well, you add another 5 minutes and that 10 minutes has increased by 50%. And I think the film gives you enough hints. It's got the hint with the he's taking the other girl out and looking at travel brochures.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's got the knife and it's got Christine as the Cockney woman. And it's like there is enough hint in there that you do feel like something doesn't quite fit. Yeah, maybe it's okay. I don't know. It just feels like it.
Yeah, I think it's. I like how like the film presented this 2 + 2 = 5 kind of argument where you're constantly going, no, it doesn't. But the film is going, yeah, it does. And it's just continuing along that kind of, line where it just goes, it equals 5. Shut up. I don't want to hear it. But you and Wilfred are the only two people who are going, no, 2 + 2 = 4, motherfucker. And I know it equals 4. So fuck you. I'm going to keep sitting here until it equals 4. So the sinking feeling of like watching everything else, all of it happen, all equal 5 for the, it's like drawing the fucking rubber band all the way out to then go, Billy Wilder goes, oh, you know what? It does actually equal 4. Boom, like releasing it and then just going like, fuck you. It does equal 4. It does equal 4. And then you're just getting this constant like, oh my God, it equals 4. Oh, okay. Fuck.
What if you actually cut the other woman? Maybe that's-
Yeah, as it was in the in the stage play.
Maybe
yeah,
it
true.
Works better if you do just have- Because I think that the reveal that-
But what's the motive for Christine to kill Leonard?
You then have something like Leonard's like, oh, I'm just going to go off my own. She's like, oh, well, you know, Leonard will
give me
the money.
Now that I'm
out,
I'm going to be like, ah, peace out. Yeah,
I'm going to give- I'm going to get- Sorry, yeah, Leonard's going to give me the money so I can weasel my way out of this perjury trial. And he's like, no, actually, you know what? Fuck you. I'm just going to go on my own because I am a piece of shit and I did murder her. I think that's perfect motivation. And it only means there's two twists, which I think, like, I think you would then have the issue that you haven't set enough groundwork for him to be a piece of shit. And you can sort of read that. But you could put other things in that don't lead to that. Anyway. So ends the Jonathan editing corner.
The original Agatha Christie short story ends with Leonard Vole getting away with it. And actually, like, escaping punishment, which is one of the few Agatha Christie endings in which a murderer actually escapes punishment, which would have had to have been sanitized for any event of doing a stage or a film version of the short story anyway, because it's never going to fucking fly if, like,
stage,
literally
maybe.
Never.
Stage, maybe.
Mm.
Well,
I don't know. People like to have the, yeah, fuck you. You got your just desserts, motherfucker, kind of moment.
Yeah,
like,
but
I highly doubt anyone is going to find satisfaction in, oh, he gets away. Whatever. That's fucking boring, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know, because when Christine starts going, like, I fucking got you. Like, and you can't reverse this, like, this has been handled. I feel like that's almost satisfying in a way. Like, it's like a light tragedy or something, you know, almost, like...
True, like, the version that we have in the film is already a bit of a tragedy anyway, when we find out that, like, Christine is actually super fucking down bad for this man. Like, she loves him enough that she will fucking put herself at the risk of perjury to get this man off, like, scot-free. Like, she loves this guy. But then for him to be like, ah, actually, I wasn't all that into you, so I was about it, is such an amazing 1-2 to pull. Like, it's such a fucking sucker punch when you really have the time to think and dwell on that fact. I think, yeah, it carries a fair good fucking bit of weight.
Yeah, it's odd. It just felt a little odd to me, that's all, and I'm still having trouble shaking that, but I still think it's fun, which I think is key. Maybe the viewer, I mean, if you're here, you
rule
should
of
have,
fun
if you're here, you've watched it already, otherwise Billy Wilder will rise from the grave and murder you, so
suck your dick.
Obviously you won't be listening anymore. But it might just be a me thing, maybe. Who's to say? Anyway.
Who is to say?
Do you have any...
Billy Wilder.
Any closing thoughts, Douglas?
Shining light moment. Anytime Wilfred did the monocle spotlight bit.
Yeah. What was the point of that?
It's supposed to be like, I think it's him putting them under pressure.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and really kind of laying down the law almost.
Yeah.
And seeing whether they crack. Seeing whether there's any kind of disturbance or like flinch almost to see whether they're being honest.
Yeah. Well, I always felt like I read it as that's sort of what it was intended to be, but it sort of felt the opposite, that like a person who's a pushover is just going to let it happen. Whereas someone who is like standing up for themselves is going to be like, no, what the fuck are you doing? Stop that. Like she like puts her hand in front of her face. And
like
she's
Christine
like,
does. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She's like willing to affect change on her environment, whereas he's just kind of like, "Ooh, I'm just keep
he just kind of
I suppose I'll just keep sitting
twitches
here.
And eats it." Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Which I think is commentary anyway on both Christine's character and Leonard's character as a whole, which I think is very fun anyway. So, Marlene Dietrich's entrance into the film is fucking iconic. Like
very femme fatale.
It's so, like, all eyes on me kind of energy, you know? Like, Billy Wilder really gave Marlene such an entrance and presence, you know? And Marlene herself, I think, really carried those initial moments with such an insane, like, check me the fuck out kind of energy, right? You just can't help but be like, oh, Marlene's cooking on it. She's a good one. Let's go.
I really liked the switcheroo of the thermoses,
the
hot chocolate
with
switcheroo, and then
Carter as well, in on the bit, giving him the hot cocoa and then swapping it out for the brandy,
that was
pretty
really
fucking
funny.
Good.
Old man's good shit.
Another subtle bit of, I think, Broganmore and Wilfred, when they put their thumbs into their vests and they just kind of, they stand there with this very kind of distinguished, like, I'm a thinking gentleman and I'm thinking about gentlemanly things that need to be thought about by gentlemen. And they kind of, yes, well, I ponder him. Like, just that stance, you know? I'm so like, it's so, as an image, you know, it gives such an energy, you know? Yeah, I really thought that was cute.
Yeah. Cool. Well, do you have any freaking trivia, buddy?
I do.
Okay. Do you mind sharing with the class?
Sorry, I was just looking through my notes.
No, you're okay. I'm fucking with you.
Didn't have anything else to say. No, I'm good. Charles Laughton, who could be moody and difficult, was apparently a dream to work with, throwing himself into the role with dedication and delight. Billy Wilder later recalled a day that was set aside just for shooting reaction shots of the jury and courtroom crowd, composed of extras hired only for the day. Normally, the assistant director would read the actor's lines and the extras would react. However, Laughton, who was fascinated with the whole process of filmmaking, begged to help. So he came in on his day off and read all the off-camera speeches for the jury members. He not only read his part, but also the judges, the prosecutors, and even Marlene Dietrich's. According to biographer Maurice Zolotow in his book Billy Wilder in Hollywood, quote, "It was an exhibition of craftsmanship such as Wilder had never seen. He believes that Charles Laughton had the greatest technical range and power of any actor, man or woman, whom he has known." End quote.
That's super cool. Yeah, fuck.
That is, what an amazing thing to say about another human fucking being.
Yeah, wow.
Like, God, he had such a way with words. Incredible. Mm. At previews, audience members received and were asked to sign cards that read, quote, "I solemnly swear I will not reveal the ending of Witness for the Prosecution."
I wonder quote. If the sort of big twist ending was less of a thing prior to this.
Perhaps, yeah. Yeah.
It very much reads like they were like, this was something really unique, but surely it wasn't in the 60s.
Nah,
like,
surely not. Yeah. Nah, we would have had a couple by, the 50s, 60s, I reckon, surely. Film historians, reach out to us at 250pod on Instagram. Our DMs are open. Marlene Dietrich was so certain she would be nominated for an Academy Award for her performance as Christine Vole that she recorded a new introduction to her Las Vegas show mentioning her nomination. She was crushed when she was not nominated.
Oh, sorry, Marlene.
Yeah, so is Marlene. You did good, though. Mm. Like, you did good, kid. Mm. When the film was released, Agatha Christie said it was the only movie she liked based on one of her stories. Later, after Murder on the Orient Express in 1974 was filmed, she said she liked that one, too.
That's nice. That's good. What if she
it's good
had,
to have
like,
approval from the original playwright.
I feel like we've had this before, like some other actor who thought that like the adaptation that we had in the
yeah, podcast was the only actually one they a really good liked. One. Mm. The the Murder on the Orient Express is directed by Sidney Lumet. I really gotta fucking check that out because that's crazy. Well,
give it a squeeze, and if it's good, we should do it for a bonus because we do like crime thrillers here. We do like whodunits.
It's got Ingrid Bergman in it from all the my main dealer persona. That guy. Oh, yeah, and Ingrid Bergman is in Casablanca as well. It's got Sean Connery in it. It's a pretty stacked cast. Anthony Perkins. I mean, like, Murder on the Orient Express has always been a stacked cast, so, it's nothing new, but very cool. The press book reviews and various articles about the production stated that the principal cast members themselves did not even know the ending of the film until the last day of shooting when the final 10 pages of the script were presented to them.
Yeah, that's a good move. I think that
good move.
Keeping that under wraps is probably, I mean, I think a good actor would be able to sort of hide that, but I think that playing it safe.
Absolutely. Yeah. You never know.
And you've got these characters that are acting very secretive and they're covering up their true intentions. So I think by actually covering up their true intentions, it allows the actors to perform as if they are extremely good at, like, hiding the truth.
Yes. Yeah. Harry Kernitz found Billy Wilder an exhausting collaborator. He once described the director at work as, quote, "Actually, two people, Mr. Hyde and Mr. Hyde," end quote. Ah, man. People in the 50s were just so much fucking, like, they just said shit like that, you know? Ah, man. So good. And finally, perhaps one of the wildest pieces of trivia I've read over the perhaps past 4 months. In order to show just one of Marlene Dietrich's famous legs, an entire scene was written that required 145 extras, 38 stuntmen, and $90,000.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Oh my God.
And what a leg it was.
What a leg.
What a leg.
Awooga.
Awooga indeed.
Crazy. That's, what can you say? Icon well, living. Marlene Dietrich. Icon dead.
Thank you, Marlene.
Go on, you Marlene.
If you enjoyed Marlene Dietrich, we have new episodes of the podcast every week. She tends not to be in them, but you know, cross
your
fingers.
Yeah, but like, you never know.
Yeah. Well, new episodes come out Tuesday midnight, Australian Eastern Standard Time, which comes out to Monday afternoons in Europe and Monday mornings in America. Douglas, where can people go if they want more info on the podcast?
If you'd like more information about the 2Fivio, you can go to www.2Fivio.com. There's a hub for all things 2Fivio related. There's the full list of IMDb's top 250 films of all time on the homepage there as of January 2020. Definitely not reflective of the list in Year of Our Lord 2024. Mm. And there are three links at the top of the website there. There's a link to listen to us on Spotify. You can find us wherever good podcasts are sold, thanks to the blessings of RSS feeds. There is a link to check us out on Instagram, which is at 250pod. Our DMs are open, as I said, so if you want to toss us a film recommendation, you got some general feedback on the podcast, we might listen, we might not. And then if you like a more formal avenue of communication, you can also write us in mail at 250.com. There is a link to do that on the website as well.
Douglas and I both use Letterboxd because we are fresh little cinephiles, Douglas.
We're little, yeah.
You know, that's the term that we always love to use about ourselves, cinephiles.
Yeah, file, yeah.
Yep, I am. It's sexually aroused by films. My account on Letterboxd is Oopa, that is UUUPAH, and Douglas.
My account is Ienzo Knight, IENZOKNIGHT, Ienzo Knight. You can look up Oopa, Ienzo Knight, or 250 in the Letterboxd search engine, and you'll find us. We do written reviews of all the films that we talk about here on the 250, as well as anything else that we watch in our spare time. Very briefly, I got raked over the coals. I don't know if any of my dance friends listen to this podcast, but I got raked over the coals for never having seen Step Up before, like any of the Step Up movies.
Step Up? I feel like I've seen Step Up.
None of them. All I knew about them was that Moose was a cool fucking guy. And I was like, I believe you. And then I didn't question it any further. So with one of my friends, I watched Step Up 1, 2, and 3.
My God.
And ranking, Step Up 2. Tippity fucking top. Like, actually, unequivocally, fucking amazing cinema. The dance is fantastic. The story is so cliched and, like, overblown, but, like, actually kind of good because it kind of leans into it a little bit. The fashion is crazy. It's got that piss color grading that everyone was doing in, like, 2008. Like, it's so edgy. The fucking score goes hard. It's just an all-around fantastic film. Step Up 2, 10 out of 10 film. Cannot floor it. In any way possible.
Uh-huh.
First Step Up film, pretty fucking banging as well, but I wanted more dance. It felt like it was much more about Channing Tatum drama. It really was feeling a bit like, this film walked so Magic Mike could run, you know? But nevertheless, some pretty fun shit happens in that. I called the plot twist in the film as well, which was crazy.
Nice.
Purely through the language that the film was giving, I called the plot twist, which I was like, wow, that's crazy that we have this innate sense when we watch movies that we're constantly digesting that film language and making our own assumptions of what is going to come next purely because of how the film was shot, how things are framed, the way characters are talking, blah, blah, blah. We have preconceptions of what's going to happen. Crazy.
Mm.
And then Step Up 3D is fine. I think perhaps would have been a smidgen cooler with 3D glasses on, because let me tell you, watching 3D films without the 3D is wild. I never actually even thought about it. Like the weird kind of like uncanny valley depth of field stuff that was going on. Like characters aren't they feel almost like cookie cutted into like every scene because the film has been edited in a way that it separates the foreground from the background so you can get the 3D effect happening. Just always fucking threw me off. And whenever they would add choreography that would make it go like, whoa, like towards the camera, I was every single time I was like, whoa, 3D. It would so fucking funny.
It would be so, I'll bet that you can download Lenticular 3D.
Oh, there is. Yeah, yeah. There's a 3D version of it that you can download. Yeah. Which is crazy.
I feel like I need like, some Lenticular 3D
motherfucker's
glasses.
Got 3D TVs out there still.
Crazy. I like just some red, blue 3D glasses. Just have them in a...
Yeah.
Just have them in a drawer somewhere to pull them out.
Have that experience
Douglas,
again.
Douglas.
Wow.
Douglas, we've been searching. We've been figuring out what do we do after the 250. Douglas, we watch every Lenticular 3D movie that has gone to cinemas.
Like Spy Kids, yeah. Like all
because I feel like
the,
that actually
yeah.
wouldn't be a massive list. Like it's probably 100 movies, maybe. I'm probably underestimating.
Lenticular 3D movies. Is that what you said? Lenticular? Lenticular?
Yeah, it's
well,
L-E-N-T.
I looked this up. Why don't you talk about what films you watched?
Douglas, I watched The Pink Panther. The original from 1963, and my
what
take
the fuck
on
spurred that on.
I was at a friend's place, and we were looking at SBS Now, and it was for free on SBS Now.
Fuck it up.
Is lenticular the lenticular is the fucking wrong word? It's stereo. Oh.
I just found a list of 3D films. The 3D films go all the way back to fucking 1914, apparently, which is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was available as soon as we had Anaglyph. I'm sorry. I said lenticular so confidently, like a
fucking
idiot.
Fucking dumbass, dumb
God,
brain idiot.
Fucking dipshit.
Stupid fuck.
3D Anaglyph movies. Anyway, so. Yeah, because surely it would be a short list because. It's a fucking pain to make because you need two cameras and
the,
like.
And you I think the English list would probably be pretty short, but let me tell you, there's some fucking crazy films that are kicking in here around the like mid 50s. Oh, but they're short films as well. Okay.
Anyway.
Sorry. Carry on.
No.
As you were.
All good. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm watching it and my takeaway was how did this turn into a franchise of 11 films and I think a couple of TV shows? It's bizarre.
Yes.
Like, you know, like the old James Bond films where there's the like slightly too long scene of James Bond trying to fuck a slightly too inebriated woman? That's what this movie is. I mean,
it's just that extended.
Like, there's straight up like, Because you hear, all right, Pink Panther, it's about Detective Clouseau, it's about a big pink diamond, and it's about, you know, the detective is a bumbling idiot who figures it out in the end. There's like 25 minutes of the Queen of India, the Princess of India, drunk off her fucking tits, and this fucking 50-year-old man is trying to fuck her. And then there's another bit. Where Detective Clouseau's wife, the man that she's having an affair with, comes into the room and then has to hide under the bed because another man who is trying to have an affair with her comes in and then he has to hide as well because Detective Clouseau comes in. Like, the guy just gets cucked so hard. It's
just constantly.
And besides that, like, the bumbling idiot slapstick element never felt clever in this film. Like, it was just like the simplest way that you could imagine him tripping on something or knocking something over or getting his hand stuck in something is always exactly what happens. It never felt clever. So,
yeah, not like the best form of slapstick comedy. I wonder, like, there's got to be a list of slapstick films somewhere as well.
Yeah.
Surely. Like, what the good ones are, quote unquote. Yeah. Like, because what comes to my mind is obviously, like, Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton, to a degree. Absolutely Buster Keaton. But, like, Kung Fu Hustle, like, what else would there be? Airplane.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like fun shit like that. But
Who Framed Roger Rabbit, The Mask. Yeah, but like this film didn't have that kind of panache.
No, it just seemed like very entry level. And I wonder if part of the reason the film was successful was that a bunch of middle-aged men got really horny while watching it. I didn't get the appeal. And then we get through this, like the mystery is introduced of like, the diamond is here and someone wants to steal it. And then an hour and 20 minutes goes by. Like, straight up, we had to pause the movie. And we were like, oh man, you know, we're about to hit the third act and it's all going to kick into overdrive. There's fucking 20 minutes left in the film. No one had tried to steal the fucking diamond. No one had tried to figure out who stole the diamond. The diamond was in play. But it was all about these old motherfuckers trying to fuck 20-year-olds. It was...
Oh, my God.
I didn't get it. I didn't get it at all. It's so weird. It was such a weird film.
Wow.
Whereas I think, like, surely the modern ones have balanced that out a bit. I mean...
Something more redeemable.
Yeah, making Detective Clouseau a cuckold was an interesting move. I don't think that he was intended to be the main character of the film. I think that he was intended to be like a side thing. But people found him appealing because he was a bumbling idiot. And then that
totally. I think it's the Johnny Depp, Jack Sparrow effect, you know, where Pirates of the Caribbean was actually supposed to be about Will Turner and Elizabeth. But then everyone just came for fucking Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
So then all the producers and everyone went, oh, like they fucking pivoted hardcore and went, okay, everything Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those kind of impacts.
Odd. So odd. Anyway. Bit of film history, I suppose.
I had no idea that there were fucking 11 films, which kind of makes me curious. I kind of want to go down the rabbit hole on these bad boys and see what the hell is going on.
That's the next 250.
The Pink Panther franchise.
The
PPCU, if you will.
That's what I've always,
PPCU. Anyway.
If you enjoyed the 250 podcast, we'll PPC you. Next week. Yeah, we normally finish these things. Thank you for listening.
Best outro out of the fucking whole year.